Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex, and I'm on the con floor of New York Comic Con in the IDW booth. And I'm talking to the awesome Tom Scioli. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm very excited to talk about this. One of my favorite books of the past couple of years is Godzilla's Monsterpiece Theater, which is an incredible mashup of Godzilla tropes, other monster movie tropes, and The Great Gatsby is kind of the wild twist that's going on there. But I want to ask you about something entirely different first. Right around the corner from us at the booth are two very awesome Godzilla arcade-style pinball machines, which I heard you were playing just before this. Two questions. How'd you do? And as a follow-up, how does it feel to play a character you wrote in pinball?
Yeah, it felt very natural, and I did really well. I got the multi-ball.
Did you really?
And it was almost meant to be. Like, it felt very very natural that I, you know, have a mind meld with the Godzilla pinball machine.
Oh, okay. So that gave you a little bit of an advantage, is you can sense what he's thinking.
I didn't realize that was going to be the case, but yeah, I think there might be something to that.
All right. Well, let's talk about this book. I'm sure this is tried and true territory for you, but I read it, was blown away by it. And one of the things that really struck me with the first issue and continues all the way to the end is you're not doing... not the easier thing, but like I think almost the easier thing would be like, ha ha ha, isn't it funny to have Godzilla mashed up with Great Gatsby? What you're doing here is actually following the themes and ideas of Great Gatsby and allowing Godzilla to be that external force that forces these characters in the direction they might be going anyway, and then some crazier directions from there. But how did you find that balance there between Godzilla tropes and Gatsby tropes?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd really internalized the Godzilla tropes. I had watched so many Godzilla movies in preparation for this. I mean, just sort of naturally out of a sense of fun, but also, you know, this has been in the works for years, because I did a couple years ago develop a Godzilla story that just never got published. But I was I'd sort of digested Godzilla and Godzilla almost, you know, became part of my being, so to where I had a much better understanding of what a Godzilla story is and what a Godzilla story isn't by the time I came into making this one. And so, and the Gatsby stuff really fit seamlessly into the Godzilla stuff. And there are a number of Godzilla movies. I guess one of the ones I'm thinking of specifically would be Godzilla versus Mothra, where there are a lot of themes of sort of hubris and like a rich man's pursuit and how his, you know, trying to make the world bend to his will and bend to his power and bend to his money, you know, how that can sort of blow up in his face, especially when Godzilla is involved. So it fit a lot better than you would think. When you first hear the pairing, it does sound absurd, but they actually kind of come together in a really nice way.
So why, I mean, I think you've kind of explained this, but like the Godzilla, it sounds like from the way you're describing it, is sort of a no-brainer. You had studied that a lot, but why Gatsby? Why was that your thought to mash those two together?
That's a great question, because I didn't give it much thought. When I was asked to pitch a Godzilla story that could feature some, you know, like a public domain mashup, that was the first thing that came to mind. It came to mind, and without any kind of preamble, I didn't have to search for it, just Godzilla versus Gatsby. So, you know, one possible explanation is the alliteration, just the fact that it's two G's. But I don't know. Maybe there's something more there. I mean, Godzilla does seem to have a, you know, it's very much a 20th century creation, very much a, you know, a commentary on certain things and sort of like a warning about certain things. And Gatsby has a lot of that too.
Yeah. And I mean, my background is in comedy, and I feel like you get that question all the time of, oh my God, where'd you come up with that? Oh, where did that come from? And usually the answer is, I don't know, I thought about it. So once you come up with that pitch of Gatsby versus Godzilla, was it then backing yourself into being like, wait, does this work? How does this work? And fleshing it out from there?
Well, I mean, I was surprised how enthusiastic everybody was about it. Because it was just something I sort of threw out there, and everybody was very enthusiastic. But I mean, I didn't pitch it as, oh, I can't possibly do this, but haha, wouldn't this be funny? I had a pretty clear sense of how that could happen, you know, how that could work.
I mentioned this earlier, but again, one of the things that I was really impressed by is you could just start with that in the first issue, and I do want to talk through some of the things that you add in the subsequent issues, but you stick with Gatsby. Like, to the final moment, you're still dealing with that story and bring that story of Gatsby and the people in his order orbit to a close. How much did you have to modulate that over the course of the issue, sort of like space out the Gatsby plot points, the character arcs, to make sure it wasn't getting overwhelmed by, I'll say it now for anybody who hasn't read it, but just the other, you bring in universal monsters, you bring in the Nautilus, you bring in other Sherlock Holmes and other fictional characters of the time.
Well, I mean, there's, Gatsby really fits the mold of a classic Godzilla protagonist. Like, in so many ways, almost as if he was designed for that. But the other thing is, a story of unrequited love can, you know, really, you know, buttress a, you know, sort of action-adventure kind of story beautifully. I mean, there's so many examples of that. And when you try to make an action-adventure movie that doesn't have some sort of heart to it, some sort of, you know, love story or you know, star-crossed lovers, you're kind of working upstream. You're working uphill. You're working upstream. Those things do seem to go together really well, and it does give a nice through line to sort of, yeah, like you said, you can kind of bring it in when you need it. Because it can't just be all Godzilla mayhem all the time.
Well, and I think the other part of it, again, while I continue to plus up your book, but once you start to work in those other characters from a reader's perspective, it feels like, maybe he's run out of Godzilla and Gatsby ideas, but you haven't. You definitely haven't. Like, it keeps going throughout the issues. That said, what led to the idea, and maybe it's the same answer of, I don't know, I just thought of it, but what led to the idea to bring in the other public domain characters and then ultimately end up with this monster mashup versus everybody?
I mean, yeah, you got to have something to build to.
Right.
And I mean, I'd always heard about a Godzilla versus Frankenstein movie. Mm-hmm. And to the point where I have very clear recollections of seeing Godzilla versus Frankenstein and what it looks like. And Frankenstein is sort of like one of those, it's like a guy in a suit. It's not somebody, you know, dressed up as Frankenstein, but it's in somebody in sort of a full latex Frankenstein suit. Now, such a thing doesn't exist. There's Frankenstein Conquers the World, which is sort of a quasi. It's got Baragon instead of Godzilla. And then there's also the Power Rangers episode and the Super Sentai episode where they fight Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. But that thing that I imagine, like, doesn't exist. And so I really wanted to tell a Godzilla versus Frankenstein story also. So it made a nice sort of landing pad. And yeah, when you got, you know, Dracula in the mix. And then these things, it really did come together in a beautiful way. And knowing that the story was going to get to that point eventually, was kind of there very early in the creative process.
You also do the art for the book, and I always find it interesting because I get a different answer almost every time, but do you see yourself as artist first, writer first, and how... tell me about your process. Like, how did you approach this?
Yeah, I mean, it all sort of... I mean, that's the beauty of doing it all yourself. It all forms very naturally, and I can sketch and get story ideas that way. I can write and get story ideas that way. When I first started making comics, I did view myself as an artist first and a writer a distant second. But at this point in my career, I feel like if I had to, you know, make that distinction, where, I mean, cartoonist is kind of the best term because it's kind of both of those things fused into one discipline. But I kind of feel almost like I am more writer than art, that the art is a way for me to execute these, you know, these stories I want to tell.
So it sounds like it's a very fluid process to get back to specifically how you tackled this book. When you're going into it, are you going back and forth then? Are you sketching out pages and going, oh, actually, I have this visual idea. Now in issue two, that's going to change this thing.
Yeah, there's so much of that. And I liken it to, you know, it, like in film, there's so much that happens in the editing process. Mm-hmm. So I sort of allow myself that, almost like drawing the comic is sort of the shooting. Like I'm shooting the film, but then when I get it in the editing room, I'm moving pieces around. I'm throwing things away. There's a lot of stuff that didn't make it into the final cut. And fortunately, since I'm also, you know, the artist and you know, doing everything, I have the luxury to do that. I can change things up till the very last minute. And I also don't feel like I'm somehow letting down my collaborators or you know, or giving somebody, you know, extra work or wasting their time, because it's all me. So I can sort of say, you know what, that whole sequence you drew that was really cool, it's gone. And because I thought of something even better. Mm.
I love hearing your excitement talking about this process. And correct me if I'm wrong, and I hope you don't mind me bringing up, but I believe you quit comics for a good long while, right?
I mean, I quit comics for like a weekend.
Oh, just
a weekend.
Okay.
But I've quit comics several times. it's just that's the one time where I actually said, "Oh, I'm quitting comics." But
okay.
No, it was really only a few days. But it was, I mean, that was like a turning point for me in my career because I was making comics while having a day job, and that was sort of the end. So I quit the wrong thing. I quit the comics instead of the day job. And after a couple of days, I was like, "No, I gotta quit the day job."
Okay.
So that's what I did, and my career blossomed since then. That was sort of I had put off that thing of quitting your day job for so long because it just felt very irresponsible to me. But, you know, it had, you know, the day job had sort of long outlived its usefulness.
So your advice to any younger artists is definitely quit your day job right now.
That used to be my advice, but it's a little irresponsible. Although you only have one life and it goes by so fast. I mean, the years, they just fly by. So take a chance on yourself. You know, maybe do something that's not the smartest or the safest or whatever. Like, take a chance on yourself. Take a chance on your talent. Take a chance on your dream. Because the time's going to go by pretty fast. And you're going to be kind of like, what was the point of all that stuff in the first place?
I wanted to ask you a general question about Godzilla, since you seem to be very clearly a fan. He's big right now. There's a lot going on. Like, there's the movies, there's a TV show, there's actually multiple movies in multiple directions, but also every single comic publisher right now seems to have their own Godzilla thing. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little baffled by the logistics of it. How is it? Like, did Godzilla lapse into the public domain and I didn't realize it? Because it does seem like, yes, like you said, and not even a seem thing. Every single publisher has a Godzilla comic, and maybe even a couple of Godzilla universes within each of those publishers. Mm-hmm. But I think some of these things, they just reach a critical mass. And Godzilla's just been there steadily, you know, lurking in the background, beating the drum. And the fandom has just accrued over time because every new generation discovers Godzilla. And it doesn't seem like anybody ever outgrows Godzilla. You know, like, nobody's like, Godzilla, I liked him when I was a kid, but Godzilla's stupid. I don't like it. Like, you never hear that. I mean, people carry the Godzilla fandom with them, and then they can, you know, share it with other people. Also, the streaming services, I never had access to all these Godzilla movies before. They were kind of hard to find, kind of hard to get your hands on. You'd have different versions of it. But now with sort of streamers, you can just, if you have the right service, you can just sit down and watch every single Godzilla movie, you know, with some exceptions.
Yeah. Well, you definitely have the most unique Godzilla book, I think, on the stands. Given how great this is, do you feel like you spent all your ideas for Monsterpiece Theater, or is there like, or could that be a capsule thing for other monster movies, other mashups?
I mean, I could do Godzilla comics forever.
Okay.
I have no end of enthusiasm for Godzilla, no end of, you know, concepts. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, will the copyright holders or trademark holders, if they're interested. But yeah, I mean, I could tell a Godzilla comic for the rest of my life.
So you would keep with Godzilla's Monsterpiece Theater. Would you switch it up with like Grapes of Wrath or something like that?
I mean, I do have a lot of Godzilla Monsterpiece Theater ideas, but I could take Godzilla in any direction, really.
Right. Before I let you go, anything else you want to plug? Anything else people should check out?
Well, I have a creator-owned comic. In addition to things like Godzilla, I also do creator-owned comics. I have a new one called Space Opera Xanadax Across the Unknown Dimensions of the Galaxy from Image Comics that's out now. I also, from IDW, same publisher as Godzilla's Monsterpiece Theater, I have a Twilight Zone issue coming up. It's going to be issue 2 of the new Twilight Zone series.
Awesome. Tom, thank you so much for coming on. Great chatting with you. Congrats.
It was really good talking, Alex.